Welcome. You have made it to the online climate advocate training of Citizens Climate Lobby. My name's Amy. I'm going to be one of your hosts tonight. And before we officially start, I want to acknowledge first that each and every one of you are taking time away from your family, your friends, and your hobbies to listen to this lesson and to do something and work on something that's so much larger than ourselves. We also want to give a quick shout out to all the attendees calling in from around the world doing critical work building political will for carbon pricing solutions abroad. Today's focus is going to be on the American model of our chapters, but please do know that most of it will also apply to your efforts if you're calling in from outside the United States as well. My name is Amy Bennett, and I am the Director of Congressional Lobby Days and Congressional Liaisons. And also with us tonight is Brett, who is going to give us an overview of what we've covered so far and where we're going from here. Brett?
Yeah, thanks so much, Amy, and welcome, everyone. We really appreciate you giving your valuable time to join us tonight. So like Amy mentioned, my name is Brett Cease. Here's a photo for both of us. My role within CCL is the Volunteer Education and Engagement Department. So if you have any questions on training after tonight, please feel free to reach out to me. We'll have our email contacts listed here in just a little bit, but we are so honored that you are giving your time to join us. And we're going to have fun in the hour ahead together. We promise you that. So just a quick shout out. Most of you probably have already been a part of the informational session or have listened and tuned into it. If you haven't done that, we do recommend checking that training out as well. And the short link to that, you can find that on our main website. But if you just go to this cclusa.org/intro short link, you can find out more information about that session. In that one, we cover a couple of different things that we don't speak to tonight, including a bit more about history and the background of Citizens Climate Lobby and our fundamental theory that politicians don't create political will, but they respond to it, and really how that orients our whole philosophy and our engagement, as well as a brief introduction into the legislative proposal that we're supporting, the Energy Innovation Act. But we'll jump more into that tonight. No need to worry about that. Our roadmap ahead for the hour, as Amy's highlighted, is basically covering more about our organization and our structure, as well as our values and how they guide all of our decisions and really unite our volunteer work. How we specifically generate political will using the tools and methodology. We'll do some case studies and reviews of that. We'll walk you through an initial lobby meeting and have more discussion about the Energy Innovation Act, which we believe is a key element towards addressing climate change that meets the scale of the climate challenge we face in the timeframe that we need it to. But with that, Amy, I'll actually pass it back to you, and we'll get started by sharing more about our 7 core values that guide our staff and volunteers.
Thanks, Brett. So we often talk about the CCL way of doing things, but what are Citizens Climate Lobby's values? We're growing so quickly that it's key to all of our thousands of supporters that we're on the same page. Our values are something we use to guide our decisions, how we respond to others. It's kind of like a home base that we can return to. We focus on 7 core values that are essential to our identity: integrity, focus, optimism, relationships, personal power, being nonpartisan, and diversity. So let's explore each of those briefly.
Yeah, jumping right in. So focus. Our focus is on the first step to an impactful solution that matches the scale of the challenges we face with climate change, as I mentioned, placing a national fee on carbon emissions. We know it won't solve the problem entirely, and we appreciate the good work that our friends and other groups are doing.
Optimism. We believe that people are good and that democracy works. We're confident that our approach will work because we see progress. We stand for a solution, not in protest of other solutions. We're a community that offers one another comfort, support, and fun as we work.
Relationships. We take the most generous approach to other people as possible, that grounded in appreciation, respect, and gratitude. We listen, and we work to find common values as we endeavor to understand our own biases. We know that there's a place for protests, but our approach is in building consensus.
Integrity. We're prepared and we do our research. We're always on time for meetings. Our approach is thoughtful and thorough. We consult experts and we use data. We're open to new information. In fact, we solicit opposing opinions.
Personal power. This one's my favorite. We use our voices to be heard, and in this simple act, it transforms each of us from being spectators on the sideline to directly engaged citizens. And it also reveals the true nature of democracy to us. We're volunteer driven, and what that means is that we trust volunteers throughout this country and the larger world to make important decisions those decisions that will create and develop things that will be valued by Citizens Climate Lobby. We also have diversity as a key value. We empower everyone in exercising their personal and political power, regardless of your race, ethnicity, nationality, gender identity, sexual orientation, age, religion, ability, or political affiliation. We seek out support and elevate people whose voices may not have been fully heard.
And being nonpartisan, we're open to all who are serious about solving climate change. You're welcome no matter where you live, what you wear, what you do for a living, or who you voted for in the last election. We work with elected officials and community leaders from across the political spectrum. We believe that everyone is a potential ally. So now that we have discussed our values, Brett's going to tell us a little bit about CCL's structures and our regions within the United States.
Yeah, thanks so much, Amy. So let's jump right in to review how we're organized collectively within the United States. You can see here on the map, you know, we've already said CCL is a volunteer-driven organization, and we're organized locally by chapters. Now, that term chapter, we also use interchangeably with group. They really mean the same thing. And a group or a chapter is a local team of volunteers that's creating political will and consistently clear evidence that citizens and constituents throughout that constituency support action on climate change. That can be within a congressional district, a town, a state, you name it. Citizens Climate Lobby has hundreds of groups across North America, from cities like New York, Los Angeles, Toronto, Pocatello, Idaho, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, you name it. We also have chapters across Europe, Australia, Africa, Asia, and Central America. Now, what holds chapters together and really unites them regardless of where they're at is that they have a group leader or a couple of co-leads who help organize and coordinate the local activities of that group. Groups can be in varying stages of development. One group you might be next to is maybe just getting up off the ground and running, have one or two people attending. And others have literally been around for over 10 years now and are more established and have dozens, you know, if not 60, 70 people meeting monthly. So if you're new to CCL and you haven't connected with your local chapter, we want to help you do that as soon as possible. So let's review how to actually achieve that. You can see here on this map, within the United States, each group belongs to one of 10 different regions featured here on the map. Now, each region has one or two regional coordinators who support the group leaders in that geographic area. And to find your local chapter, we're going to put a link in the chat window as well. You can go to the main website and look for chapters under the About tab. And we encourage new volunteers, you know, especially if you're just getting up and running, to seek out your group leader's contact information and even call, introduce yourself, you know, find out more about your group whenever you feel comfortable to get more involved. And we also know sometimes emails can go to spam. Maybe you've reached out and you haven't heard back. Help us, or let us help you, rather, make that introduction in that case. Also know, if there's not a group that's actually organized in your area yet, we'd love to help connect you with our Emerging Group Leader Program if you'd like to get one started. Every chapter has been in that same situation at some point, and wherever you're at, we'd love to help you get active in your own area. So now that we've done a quick overview of really how we're organized by groups and group leaders and our overall structure, I'll pass it back to you, Amy, to talk about a role you know quite well.
Thanks, Brett. Well, and that other role we want to talk about is that of a congressional liaison. A CCL liaison is someone who represents CCL on behalf of the volunteers in a district or state when congressional staffers need to be contacted. Since there's 535 members of Congress, our goal is to have a personal liaison for each of those offices and their staff. The liaisons build ongoing relationships with a member of Congress and their staff by maintaining regular personal contact and by coordinating the group's meetings and the communications with that office. That can be anything from sending a card when your member is ill, updating the office with timely resources related to climate change, or even inviting the staff to a local barbecue. We're working on a pretty complex issue, climate change, so having one consistent point of contact with the office of each member of Congress makes that process of communicating about climate change and our solution much more effective. However, it's also a good idea to have a larger support team and backup liaisons to help out that main liaison as needed. The liaison is a representative for CCL in that district or state, and the liaison has the goal of moving that member of Congress towards supporting the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. Now, here's an important point of clarification. Even though we have liaisons who make the personal contact with key staffers, each CCL volunteer is encouraged to personally write or call the office of their member of Congress and to do so frequently to voice their support.
Thanks, Amy. One other important point really with our relationships with members of Congress is that of confidentiality. And, you know, whether it's a seemingly casual conversation we've had about policy details or, you know, other private comments we've heard, what we do is we train ourselves, and it's really critical to do this, to respect what we've heard in confidence, because when we consistently demonstrate we can be trusted, it's helped open the door for us for deeper conversations to really move our members forward. And, you know, things that build trust for our members of Congress or our staff are really the same thing that do that same effect for trust building with friends, neighbors, coworkers, same thing that you can apply for building a strong relationship with your Congress member. Remember, they're just like people like you and I. And the key thing is to really be able to highlight, we want to move them forward and to see them and to help them see us as potential allies. So with that, I'll pass it back to you, Amy, to kind of review how we begin doing that.
So connected to building those relationships of trust, let's explore the CCL concept of looking for common ground. When we look for common ground, we start in three places. We look for shared values, social connections, and places that we care about. Regarding shared values, it can start at the most simple level. If you have kids, consider that most of your members of Congress have kids, and they're concerned for their future as well. So during meeting introductions, mention your kids or your grandkids.
Some other examples, you know, that you can bring in. Again, this is really a wellspring of information that you can personally apply to your own lives and what you share. But it can be anything from, you know, your outlook for a safe and prosperous future, your religious beliefs, the priority of energy independence, the importance of freedom of choice, you name it. You know, whenever there is a value that you find that you share with that office or that member, keep returning to it and emphasizing it as a way that you're both looking out from your own vantage point to the world together in your interactions. You know, one example of how using these shared values in an action can really help build that relationship from resistance towards looking out and having that relationship be built is one that our, you know, CCL group in Texas found with their GOP member through the years. The member, after meeting with them for many years, told them that he agreed, you know, and had confidence that the U.S. should continue to lead in emission reductions by seeking cleaner air through American technology and innovation without sacrificing jobs, and that he agreed that efforts to reduce emissions should work hand-in-hand with economic well-being. A lot to build off from there in terms of seeing the importance of taking action with policy from that same vantage point. On social connections, like Amy's mentioned, we take the time to learn about the people that we meet with in advance seriously. So for members of Congress, this can be finding out about past jobs, schools, interests they have, boards they've served on. You can do the same thing with aides, especially in the LinkedIn era. It's certainly easy to find out about that information ahead of time by looking them up online. And you can also do that in the meeting, right? Just asking a staffer or the member to tell them more about themselves in the meeting really helps break the ice. It isn't just being polite, though, too. If there's something that we find out in that connection, whether it's, you know, hometown, a college connection, you name it, it gets them talking about themselves instead of them feeling like we're lecturing. And we also want to make sure to follow up and help build and leverage that connection that we find out. And lastly, like Amy's also mentioned, common ground we can be built out literally from a patch of ground on this earth, a place that we love or that the member of Congress cherishes. No matter who we talk to, we know that people love their home community and this larger world passionately. So in just a little bit, we'll jump into an exercise to get us to think about how we can use our own stories as a basis for this common ground. But I'll pass it back to you, Amy, to actually share a specific story that highlights the importance of this relationship building with a congresswoman putting the framework we just discussed into action.
Thanks, Brett. So here's a story from one of our congressional liaisons about the relationship developed with their congressmember. This is from Carl. Our congresswoman has more than once closed our meetings by telling us that we inspire her, that we are the true patriots. Of course, we really appreciate these sentiments. They give us energy and they embolden us to carry on. But upon deeper reflection, I've come to realize that these are heartfelt affirmations and they're based on a foundation of trust. She's counting on us to be successful. and not only trust that we have a great solution, signing on as original co-sponsor of HR 763 is strong evidence of that, but we also have a winning methodology. We show up with genuine respect and appreciation for all members of Congress and a laser-like focus on an effective bipartisan solution. Every day, she manifests a fundamental trust in American democracy, and she lets us know that Citizens Climate Lobby helps her feel that way.
And I think the important thing to emphasize here is that this is the value of appreciation. You know, we use this framework, whether it's, you know, beginning a statement of appreciation with our meetings, to a letter to the editor that we're writing, or any other way that we can outreach, as not just a kickoff device, but we work to keep appreciation in our mind throughout interactions, because some people, believe it or not, might have a predisposed view of us as climate advocates, like we might of them. So really asking ourselves to appreciate them not only changes their view of us, that fundamental chemistry in the art of relationship building, but it also takes that chip off of our own shoulder about who we might think that they are. And in that process, it helps us remove our own biases, to see them as someone that we want to work with instead of as an obstacle. And I think what I love about this quote is that, as Carl's example highlights, this approach puts us in a generous place that allows us to seek understanding and build from that common ground. So if you walk away with one rule tonight, know CCL has this. We treat everyone, even those who may disagree with us, with respect, appreciation, and gratitude. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Amy.
So to tie all this first section up, let's do an exercise about finding common ground and developing your own story. So here's a quote from E.B. White. You might recognize him as the author of Charlotte's Web, and he also wrote The Elements of Style, among other things. This quote is from an interview he gave with the New York Times back in 1969, and he said, "Every morning I wake up torn between a desire to save the world and an inclination to savor it. This makes it hard to plan the day." He went on to ask, "But if we forget to savor the world, what possible reason do we have for saving it? In a way, the savoring must come first." Let me repeat that last part. If we forget to savor the world, what possible reason do we have for saving it? So in this exercise that we're going to be doing in just a minute, I want to ask you to identify a very specific place that you can paint a picture of for us that you love that's threatened to be negatively impacted by climate change. I'm not talking about like a generic type of place, like just any old beach or the mountains or whatever, but very specific. And we want to focus on a place that's threatened by climate change rather than other environmental factors like overdevelopment or toxic pollution. Let's key into how climate change is and will impact the places we care for. And if it's in your hometown or congressional district, all the better to help establish that common ground.
And I'll just add to that, Amy, the reason that we really are grounding us in this approach is that social science research continues to highlight that we as humans fundamentally connect much more strongly with our own backyard, concerns for our community, than further off feeling impacts, whether in distance or space. So really start thinking about what your place looks like, sounds like, you know, paint a picture in your own mind's eye using descriptive imagery about what and why you savor it. And if possible, really tying in the potential or the current impact that it's already facing from climate change, whether it's reduced worker or agricultural productivity, extreme heat and wildfires, droughts, inland flooding, disease vector expansion, anything that you can help make your story personal and connected to common concerns for our natural world and economic well-being, all the better. And why we do this is this exercise is a way to begin developing a story that we are prepared to share with others. We know stories are incredibly powerful means of connecting with people regardless of background. And the more prepared we are to immediately step up, share our own story, make that personal connection, and ground it with climate change, the more we can humanize what we're facing right now with climate change and help those around us deepen their own concern for caretaking and preserving these places for future generations. I'm going to give an example from my own life, and we'd love to read yours as well. So for the past several years, I've actually had the privilege of serving as the regional coordinator for the Gulf Coast of CCL while living in Dallas, Texas, and the chance to work with, at least in my biased opinion, some of the best, most inspiring climate advocates in the country. And as a former canoe instructor, I've also gone for a lot of paddles along the river trails just south of the Houston coastline. And as we know, it was here that only two summers ago, our CCL chapters in the larger Houston community witnessed an unimaginable deluge of more than 50 inches of record-breaking rain in their community. Some of them forever lost homes, were forced to move, and lost treasured possessions like photo albums, family heirlooms, and they're still dealing with that back-breaking effort of rebuilding more than $100 billion, unprecedented, in storm damages. And for me, the story of the Houston impact doesn't end there. The resolve of our volunteers throughout that Third Coast area has been inspirational ever since. They've hosted our past two regional conferences. They have one just coming up actually this next month. And they've gained the support of the mayor of Houston and other local officials on both sides of the aisle in support of the Climate Solutions Caucus, which we'll talk about more in a little bit, as well as climate action to ensure that our elected officials are earnestly working together toward solutions that address the underlying cause behind so much of this pain and loss and destruction. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Amy.
Thanks, Brett. So if we say our goal is to create political will, then we should actually clarify, what does that mean, political will? Think of building political will as actions that our chapters take strategically to demonstrate to Congress that the will of the people is to have a sustainable climate. And what does that look like? Political will is that demonstration of support back home. Legislators need to know about an actionable step, not simply something that we want, not that we just want a safe and healthy climate and strong economy. They want to hear exactly what policies we want enacted so they can act on our will. And that's precisely what we're going to get to in just a moment. But first, a little bit more on why we use the methodology that we do.
They also want to know that we're going to have their back if they stick their necks out and become the climate champions that we need them to. So we organize people by congressional district. We found that to be the most efficient way to consistently demonstrate authentic, homegrown, grassroots support from throughout this country to demonstrate political will across the U.S. for Congress. And throughout our decade of organizing, we've learned what generates political will and what doesn't. And why that's important for all of you on the line tonight is we know you are giving us this gift, this precious commodity, this scarce resource that you have, your limited time and energy. And so we only want to ask you what we know will invest and have a good chance of demonstrating the will of people in your own district. We want you to take actions that you know will be strategic and successful in moving your member of Congress towards the direction of our legislation. And with that, let's talk about our methodology.
So what creates political will? We've organized these actions into five levers or tools. We call them the levers of political will. One is lobbying Congress. Second is media relations. Third is grassroots outreach. Fourth is grass tops engagement. And five is group development or chapter development and organizing. We're going to review each in depth next. First, there's lobbying. Nothing's more impactful than citizens meeting frequently with their member of Congress or their staff. So we meet with them often in order to build a relationship of trust and show them that this legislation is something that their constituents want and to educate them on how our proposal will impact their state or district. To create political will through lobbying, you can get involved by becoming a liaison or a liaison support team member for your district or state in your local chapter. You can learn effective communication skills and listening skills with CCL's Training Center on Community and attend a meeting with your member of Congress in Washington, D.C. or in your district. Lobbying is the most highly leveraged activity we do. The second lever of political will is media. We work with both print and digital media in order to drive that conversation towards the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. So creating political will through the media, you can get involved by being the point person for a local newspaper, to watch for opportunities for writing letters to the editor. You can write letters to the editor and op-eds of your own. You can spread stories and coverage across social media, and you can also get to know your editorial board and the key reporters at your local or state newspaper.
That third lever, grassroots outreach. So you can think of this really as recruitment and education for the larger public. We recruit and educate people on climate solutions, on citizen advocacy, and on really how to wrap your arm around our larger government and be effective. And opportunities abound within grassroots outreach, whether it's tabling, which is really attending a public fair or a farmer's market-like event, to represent Citizens Climate Lobby and hand out flyers and information and to really generate letters and contact to Congress. You could train to become a public speaker and to seek out speaking engagements for other Citizens Climate Lobby members as well. And we also want to put a quick word in about our action teams. These teams are organized by volunteers around specific topics, so they're not specific to a locale or an area chapter, but really are focused on a sector like the ocean or energy or agriculture. And what they're doing is working and coordinating throughout the larger country and world to moving that area towards support for effective carbon pricing policy like the Energy Innovation Act. Most of our action teams usually meet monthly by phone or Zoom like this, and they're doing some of our most important work. And they're always looking for new volunteers as well to jump in and make a difference. So especially if you're coming into CCL with a wealth of experience from a particular sector that you're really passionate about and would like to share, you know, consider joining an action team. And I've just put a link to that directory of our more than 50 options in the chat window as well. You can just search for action team directory. That fourth lever of political will is then focused on grass tops. So if we've heard of grassroots, grass tops are really the top leaders in the community, people that are influencing decision-making, whether that's local leadership with elected offices, faith leaders and backgrounds, business, you name it. And some opportunities within grass tops outreach include anything from identifying these key experts and leaders in your community and seeking their endorsement as a way of influencing your own member of Congress, to scheduling a meeting and educating them about a proposal. And even if they're not quite ready yet to endorse the policy outright, having a chance to have that conversation about what your local community is facing with climate impacts. I've also highlighted a link to the more than 1,000 individuals that have signed on as supporters and prominent individuals for the Energy Innovation Act. Lastly, translates then to developing your local chapter or group organizing and development. And I would say this, developing your chapter at the grassroots level in terms of both numbers and skills, it's what allows us to do anything else more effectively, from lobbying, generating more media, doing more outreach, and some ways that you can already jump in and have an immediate impact within your chapter could be helping organize and communicate about the monthly meeting, looking around your chapter and seeing who isn't there that should be, and inviting new people in your community to also attend and have their voice represented. And just bringing food and sharing in that fellowship, helping create a culture of fun as we work on this important topic. And so really, here's the levers in review. Again, the key thing to think about is that this is a menu that you've been handed, and you can pick your favorite dish from those list of options. We don't want you to have to jump into all of these. We want you to be strategic in how you invest your time with what you have most energy or passion for. And as you get more involved and you get more comfortable with how we organize and gain confidence, you know, push yourself to do things outside of your comfort zone. But no, we don't expect you to do anything more than just one of these areas at first and really jump in to be effective in that one zone. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Amy.
There may be times when your group experiences a lever that seems stuck. For example, you've met with your member of Congress several times. They agree the Energy Innovation Act is the best proposal, but they're just not ready and to support it until they see more support from primary voters and businesses in the district. So in this example, to demonstrate to them that political will that the support that the member needs to see, it makes sense to ramp up outreach to businesses or community leaders and to also grow your group or chapter so that you can broaden your base of support.
And I think it's also really important to acknowledge, you know, what we are trying to do together is not inherently easy. We get that, right? There's a lot of stuck levers out there. That's why we're in the situation that we're facing. But we also know this, that citizens that are passionate, well-trained, organized by congressional district, and who have that good core system of support, we together can more than influence the political process. And for me, what sets Citizens Climate Lobby apart from other organizations is this. We are committed to building positive, ongoing relationships within our community and with our members of Congress, no matter who they might be, in order to create that political space that allows these leaders to move in the direction that we need them to. So when we talk about building a relationship, what does that look like? How does that feel? Well, one example that we would be remiss to not include from the founder and president of Citizens Climate Lobby, Marshall Saunders, who really started this organization, would be an example from the life of Mahatma Gandhi. Now, I'm guessing many people on the line know the story of Mahatma Gandhi's efforts to convince the British to end their colonial rule of India. But perhaps more overlooked, before that time, Gandhi actually cut his teeth fighting for the rights of Indians in South Africa. And this brought him straight into contact with the head of the Transvaal government, a gentleman by the name of General Jan Smuts, pictured here on the left. And so the story goes that when they met, Gandhi cut right to the chase. He walked in and quietly told the general this: "I've come to tell you that I'm here to fight against your government." Somewhat astonished, Smuts reportedly said right back to him, "Oh, really? And do you have anything else to tell me then?" To which Gandhi said, "Well, yes, I intend to prevail." Even a bit more taken aback, Smuts asked him, "And how do you intend to do that?" Gandhi had three simple words that pivoted their whole relationship from henceforth and really informs our own work. He said this: "With your help. With your help." Now, years later, in his own diary, Smuts admitted that this is exactly what had happened. "Gandhi," he wrote, "appealed to what was best and most noble in me. He never forgot the human background of the situation, never lost his temper or succumbed to hate, preserved his gentle humor even in the most trying of situations. His manner and spirit even then contrasted markedly with the ruthless and brutal forcefulness which is in vogue for our day." Now, you might be listening in and thinking, you know, how could we expect to accomplish what Gandhi did? But I would invite you that this is what is at the heart of Citizens Climate Lobby's methodology. 5 years ago, people told us there was no way that we could get Republicans to sponsor and introduce a resolution in Congress that said climate change is real, significantly influenced by humans, and that Congress needed to do something about it. But Citizens Climate Lobby volunteers chose to see that as a possibility and worked with then Representative Gibson to introduce the Republican climate resolution. 3 years ago, people told us there was no way that you could get Republicans and Democrats to sit down together, much less form and join a caucus with the word climate in its title. But Citizens Climate Lobby volunteers again chose to see that as a real possibility and worked with Representatives Deutsch and Curbelo to create the Climate Solutions Caucus, working together to talk about solutions and address the most pressing issue of our time. You know, even just a year ago in November, people said it was impossible to believe that Republicans and Democrats would be willing to co-sponsor and introduce a significant carbon pricing piece of legislation, as it hadn't happened in over a decade. But again, Citizens Climate Lobby leaders and volunteers throughout this country chose to see that as a possibility, and today the Monumental Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act is a direct result of those 10 years of organizing work that CCL volunteers throughout this country did with their members of Congress. So returning back to Gandhi, Gandhi sought to build a relationship of significance, of authenticity with General Smuts to create that change. And in turn, this approach led to substantial results. Some of the most oppressive laws and civil rights that had brought down Indians within South Africa were repealed, and a new era of more civil rights was ushered in. And we, in turn, by using genuine respect and appreciation for those to see the best in the other person, building on that common ground we reviewed, and those relationships that we can build engendered in trust can lead the change that we need in our policies and government. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Amy.
Well, let's step back to put this all together to connect how Gandhi's example ties in with CCL's methodology of looking for the best in others, being for something, and finding common ground and helping us build relationships. Here's a powerful case study of building a relationship with members of Congress. This led to political will that's been profiled in national media, including a piece in the New York Times. Here's a photo of Jay Butera. Jay worked to address climate change for more than a decade, and he's been a volunteer with Citizens Climate Lobby since 2012. And now he's on our board of directors. In 2013, he met Representative Ted Deutsch, a Florida Democrat whose district was experiencing the effects of global warming. So Jay mentioned that he had a vision to create a bipartisan caucus in the House that would focus on climate solutions. And Deutsch liked the idea and agreed to work with Jay and the Citizens Climate Lobby towards that goal. So Jay started visiting offices on Capitol Hill in an effort to get Republicans and Democrats to sit together and devised a two-by-two approach. Jay reasoned that the first movers were likely to come from Florida. The coastal districts are mainly Republican, and the coastline is threatened existentially by climate impacts, he said.
So what they did is they went to Miami and attended events in Southern Florida that focused on climate change. And there Jay met with locals and helped start Citizens Climate Lobby chapters. And Jay said at the time, I saw local mayors and county leaders were actually dealing with the impacts of climate change head on. Some towns had obviously at this point already raised roads, moved wells miles inland to escape seawater intrusion. And in other places, seawater was pouring into the streets with every high tide. And so what Jay realized is that Congress members in Washington were disconnected from that reality on the ground back in Florida.
So for the next 2 years, Jay and many other volunteers worked to address that disconnect. He and others reached out to 55 local leaders, including mayors, county commissioners, presidents of chambers of commerce, state legislatures, and university presidents across South Florida, most of them from Republican-held congressional district. He asked them to sign a letter asking Congress to act on climate change. And it made a difference. One of the first Republicans to step forward was Representative Carlos Curbelo. And in February of 2016, he joined Ted Deutch as co-chairs and they formed the first ever bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus in the U.S. House of Representatives, which is exploring policy options that address the impacts, the causes, and the challenges of our changing climate. So zooming to 2020, this momentum Citizens Climate Lobby volunteers have generated for bipartisan work continues to show up from not only the Climate Solutions Caucus in the House, but also cross-party climate dialogue is happening in the Senate. Both caucuses are bringing members of both parties together for productive conversations, and it's a crucial first step in finding common ground on major legislation. CCL's played an integral role in building up the membership of these caucuses, but they work independently, and overall, as a body, they don't explicitly endorse the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, although all six original co-sponsors on the House side are on it. Now, additionally, this past summer, America's mayors are joining in on the action. The U.S. Conference of Mayors, an organization comprising 1,407 mayors from cities with populations of 300,000 or more, recently passed a series of environmental resolutions at their annual meeting, and one of which calls for Congress to put a price on carbon. What these examples highlight is the power of a methodology, how demonstrating respect and appreciation for others, even those who we think oppose us, finding common ground and building relationships leads to political will. CCL volunteers meet with their Congress members and appeal to the best in them. They create political will locally and allow these elected officials to respond to it. So now that we've reviewed some case studies overall, Brett's going to discuss how this connects with our mission.
And I think many people on the line probably are familiar with our vision to create the political will for a livable world. I'm guessing, though, that there's a little less awareness about CCL's equally critical purpose organizationally. And so what we're focused on is in generating the political will through personal empowerment and breakthroughs. We know politicians don't create political will, and that it's our job as citizens that are concerned to create so much political will that they have no other choice than to do what we ask them. And so, as an organization, we teach ourselves how to empower ourselves to show up and develop these relationships so that members of Congress can see there is political will and to endeavor to show that your voice by showing up does make a difference. And so if we say that we actually enable and we strive to enable individual breakthroughs, what does that actually mean? Well, I'm guessing if we step back for just a moment, you know, we've all had experiences in life where we've discovered a newly found source of strength or an inner ability to realize that through our own active participation in a cause, we too make a difference. And I'll actually pass it back to you, Amy, to share one of those stories to really ground us in the second activity we'll be asking everyone to share in.
One powerful example of an individual experiencing a breakthrough is that encapsulates what's at the heart of this personal transformation that we're talking about. And this is Piper. That's her on the right-hand side. Piper's an 18-year-old student who attended the CCL National Conference a few years ago, and she's now on our board of directors. Piper was so inspired by the empowerment she experienced early on, she wrote the following to Mark Reynolds, our executive director. She said, I honestly have no idea where to begin my gratitude for CCL. Never have I found an organization that gave me so much confidence that I can change the world. Before, I viewed Congress as a bickering dead end. I was so inspired by the positive interactions between our citizens, lobbyists, and the staffers that I'm now considering running for office someday so that I can foster more bipartisan cooperation in politics. At the conference, I was treated as though my age and unique point of view was actually an asset to the organization. So Piper's experience of personal empowerment is really at the heart of everything that our organization strives to provide for all of our volunteers. Now, since then, Piper's continued to use her voice for climate advocacy in helping lead the passage of a bipartisan state resolution acknowledging the impacts of climate change in Utah, and she's even given a TED Talk on her experience. So as one final distinction, what we mean when we say empowerment, well, I think it's helpful to reflect on the words of Charles Reich in his book, Power and the Law. As a legal scholar, he was deeply involved in policy making for decades, and he explained that when you reach out to another person through the energy and creativity that's within you, and the other person responds, you're exercising power. When you make somebody else do something against their will, to me, that's not power at all. That's force. And force, to me, is a negation of power. So I think Reich's words are a helpful window into the importance of why CCL communicates from a different frame. So because this experience of personal breakthroughs with empowerment is at the core of our organization, we'd like to take a minute to invite you all to reflect back on your own lives on a time when you've also experienced a breakthrough. It could be a story of when you were empowered by a parent or a role model or your boss or something, someone you just happened to meet. Whatever your story might be, we look forward to hearing how it moved you to realize something about yourself and how it engaged you in a broader sense of being involved in the world. So please share that in the chat section. Again, it could be something like organizing your neighborhood to preserve trees, going back to school after having kids, starting your own lawn mowing business. I'll tell you a real short story of something that happened to me. When my son was very little and going to elementary school, of course, I was involved in the PTA. And we also had construction going on around our neighborhood with a road that was being put through. And so we started getting a lot of cut-through traffic on what would normally be really quiet streets that didn't even have sidewalks. So I went to a city council meeting to voice my concern about this and sat next to Mary, our PTA president. And when the city council asked, well, what can we do about this? I whispered in Mary's ear, I said, well, we could put a roadblock up on Puebla Street and that would solve the problem. And Mary just shot up and said, we can put a roadblock on Puebla Street. And within several weeks, that roadblock was up and made a huge difference. I was thrilled, of course. By reminding ourselves that the times we've had breakthroughs in our personal power and stepped out of our comfort zones, we remember that real and profound personal change is possible. And by grounding ourselves in the many transformative opportunities we've already shared, we hope that you're empowered to have some more breakthroughs through your involvement with CCL.
And let's jump into this final quarter by just sharing a bit about our laser talks, and then we'll jump into our own legislation. So CCL has a series of what I like to think of as bite-sized advocacy resources that are really at the heart of how we learn to be effective communicators. Now, each of these talks are brief. They focus on only one connection or aspect of our issue, and we take the time to putting them into practice seriously. And so to find them, you can just go to our main website. And then from there, on the bottom green footer, you know, you can search also for laser talks, but you can also just find them there as highlighted on the screen. And again, they're from anything ranging from energy economics to the science. They're all small and written in brief, concise language to really encourage you to not really memorize, but rather internalize and help you kind of ground and be aware of a lot more of the footnote and resources available. So we take time organizationally to really practice our own new talks, you know, both alone and as well as in groups, one at a time each month to hone our own craft. You can find them helping you in your own letter to the editor writing or talking with leaders, even if you have a conversation with your Uncle Vernon next, who might be skeptical about the whole thing with climate change. The key thing, though, is to emphasize with intentional practice, you too will feel more comfortable and conversant if somebody asks you about connection to a wide range of issues that relate to global warming. And it also highlights the importance after tonight, if we haven't gotten to something you're curious about, chances are there's a laser talk on it. So check those out as a great resource. And what we'd like to do to transition to tonight's topic of the Energy Innovation Act is actually review the laser talk on H.R. 763. So wherever you might be, I invite you to thoroughly embarrass yourself, read this out loud with me, whether you're in a coffee shop, in the comfort of your own basement, wherever that is. Here is a brief summary of that actual laser talk. I'm going to internalize and really be able to speak, you know, as I might say, use your own words of that. And here we go. The Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act of 2019 is the first bipartisan carbon pricing legislation introduced in a decade. It's based on a plan developed by Citizens Climate Lobby that accounts for the costs of burning fossil fuels. And if enacted, this act will drive down our own carbon pollution and help manage climate impacts through the means of American technology, innovation, and ingenuity. Climate scientists and economists are alike. They say it represents the best first step to reduce the impacts of global warming. And by placing a predictably rising carbon price, what we'll do is stimulate both invention and investment in the new clean energy economy, where we need to be leading the world, and also ensure that every American, no matter what income they might have, has the means to weather that transition and help participate in putting solutions to work. And we'll close this section again by emphasizing that reading through any of these laser talks, it's a great way to find out information and a good grasp of the basics outside of tonight's training if we didn't get to a topic you're curious about. Pass it back to you, Amy.
Thanks, Brett. So this is a great time to promote all of what we're about to review is available on CCL Community. That's our sister website. It's simply community.citizensclimate.org. And to find these materials, go to the resources and training menu options and then follow the pathway to working with Congress. And even though no two meetings with Congress are the same, let's talk about a basic outline for having a meeting with Congress. So prior to the meeting, what we like to do is do some research on your member of Congress and the district. Learn what they're really proud of, what they like, and what they've accomplished. Research local impacts of climate change. Learn how the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act will impact their district or state. Review previous meeting minutes to find out what questions came up, and determine ahead of time who will be responsible for certain roles like follow-up. And we actually assign roles: the leader, the time monitor, the note taker, the person who makes the ask, and the person who leaves materials. So we usually meet in teams of 4 to 6 CCL members, and we like to say lobbying is a team sport. Our basic meeting outline goes like this. We start off by thanking the member or the staffer for meeting with us. The timekeeper asks, how much time do you have for the meeting today? We introduce ourselves briefly. If we meet with a staffer, then we might ask the staffer to tell us a little bit about himself or herself. We show appreciation for something that they've done recently that we sincerely appreciate. It doesn't have to be about the climate or environment. We explain our purpose to create the political will for a livable world. And we briefly state our request to support or introduce legislation that puts a fee on carbon-based fuels and returns the net revenue to American households. Then we mentioned that we have more to say on that, but first we'd like to discuss the members' concerns, so we ask for their concerns. Then comes the listening and discussion part. Here are some possible questions you could ask to further the discussion, but be flexible based on your relationship. For instance, rather than react to their answer right away, it's most important to listen, ask clarifying questions, and help them feel heard. Having done your research, you'll probably be able to anticipate what you think their responses might be. So you might ask them something like, what might be preventing the representative from supporting our legislation? Or who would you like to hear from the district? Or what's your preferred plan to lower emissions?
Thanks so much, Amy. That's a really thorough, concise response. Again, you're building out that supporting ask, getting them to say yes to something as you build for the next meeting's momentum. Clarify any follow-up. Make sure to take great notes and do a debrief outside in the hallway. And with that, thank them for their time. And so that's a brief overview of how we conduct an initial meeting with the congressional office. But since we don't have the time tonight on this training, in in-person workshops, we actually do a mock lobby meeting where you're actually in a meeting preparing to meet with a member of Congress, and then you actually do that together with your volunteers next to you. But we have that training online. We do encourage you to practice with teams ahead of actually an actual meeting and do some run-throughs. But with that, we've reached our most essential topic. And so I'll pass it back to you, Amy, to jump into that.
Okay, so we've reached the final and most essential topic. Let's talk about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. So Citizens Climate Lobby has advocated for a carbon fee and dividend style of policy for more than 10 years. And in late 2018, Congress introduced the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act in both the House and the Senate with both Republican and Democratic sponsors. This was the first time ever a bicameral, bipartisan carbon pricing bill was introduced in Congress. Now, when the 116th Congress started that early January 2019, the House reintroduced the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act as H.R. 763, and Citizens Climate Lobby now advocates for this specific bill. So let's go under the hood and find out a little bit more about this monumental act. But first, a little review of where we are now. The price we currently pay as consumers for fossil fuels is artificially low. And why is that? It's because governments have historically seen their own economic growth linked with incentivizing fossil fuel development. And that's also due to some other factors, such as before production, fossil fuel producers get a discounted leases on public lands and offshore. During production, fossil fuel producers receive subsidies, tax breaks, and so on. And then after production, the price we pay for fossil fuels doesn't include a lot of hidden costs. Now, these hidden costs are known by economists as externalities, and some of them include the U.S. military spending trillions on protecting energy supply lines around the world. In terms of health, the use of coal alone increases healthcare costs by $300 to $500 billion a year. And the environmental damages, of course, those costs associated with adapting and mitigating the effects of a changing climate system.
And so building on that, if the market price for any product, not just fossil fuels, doesn't include its real costs, economists have a word for that as well. It's called a market failure. And global warming has been called by some as the greatest market failure in the history of capitalism. So economists say, given that reality, the best first step to correcting that failure of the market is to hold a product accountable for its cost, to embed it into the cost of doing business. So for fossil fuels, that means moving those hidden costs Amy just discussed back onto the balance sheet of fossil fuel producers. And so then the idea of putting a price on carbon is simple. We add to the cost of doing business in those resources because we want to reveal the hidden costs that are currently not taken responsibility for. Getting that price right then means that the market tells the truth, it transforms our economy to move in the right direction, and it means also that ordinary people like you and I, consumers, taxpayers, small business owners, we'll recover the market leverage we're supposed to have in determining whether we do something that's too costly or not. Now, we know the solution. It's a very straightforward one. If the problem is too many greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the solution is to stop putting them in the atmosphere in the first place. And to get rid of something, economists remind us the fastest way to do that is to make it more expensive. A great corollary example. The National Cancer Institute and the World Health Organization concluded in 2016, after a thorough, many multi-decade study from many countries, that significantly influencing the excise tax or the price of tobacco products is the single most consistently effective tool for reducing tobacco use. So again, that point to the example of cigarette smoking. You can see that on the chart, the example of the price going up and the percentage of the population going down in direct correlation. And again, by making carbon pricing more expensive, or carbon pollution rather, more expensive, we hold it accountable for its costs. And with that, let's review how the Energy Innovation Act actually does that.
There we go. The Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act can be thought of as having four important elements. So first, how it works is, number one, with a carbon fee. This policy puts a fee on fossil fuels like coal, oil, and gas. It starts low and grows over time. And that's going to drive down carbon pollution because energy companies, leading industries, and American consumers will move towards the cleaner, cheaper option. Second, there's a carbon dividend. The money collected from this fee is allocated in equal shares every month to the American people to spend as they see fit. The program administrative costs are paid from the fees collected. The government doesn't keep any of the money from the carbon fee. Third is the border carbon adjustment. To protect U.S. manufacturers and jobs, imported goods will pay a border carbon adjustments, and goods exported from the United States will receive a refund under this policy. Fourth is a narrow regulatory adjustment. There'll be a narrow regulatory pause on only the greenhouse gas effect of CO2 for 10 years. This avoids doubling up on penalties. It gives the policy a chance to meet ambitious targets and provides predictability to businesses so they can plan their change. The regulatory pause goes like this. We pause a small group of regulations on the greenhouse gases for one decade. After five of those first 10 years, to allow for the impacts to start taking place, scientists will begin assessing the effectiveness of the Energy Innovation Act. Currently, a small number of regulations regulations on greenhouse gas emissions. Most of them are explicitly protected in the bill. In fact, those that are paused by the bill, many aren't currently in effect because they've been tied up in the courts. So for questions, we've put a link into the chat for the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act Q&A segment. It's really a great resource to do a deeper dive into the bill. Brad?
We'll get to any of those in the actual Q&A discussion here in just 2 minutes. So feel free to start putting any questions again in the Q&A. We found that that is the most effective way to address any of your questions so we can stay on the line and go specifically to what you're curious about. But in summary right now, the Energy Innovation Act is absolutely good news for the climate. It's incredibly close to what CCL has been advocating for and has a real chance to pass through Congress. It's effective. It's good for people and the economy. It's bipartisan and revenue neutral, and it's a huge win for the climate. The emission reductions goals in this policy are more ambitious than any bipartisan carbon pricing bill we've seen submitted to Congress for many, many years, and it's good news for the larger world as well. As a result of CCL volunteers' hard work, it's a clear signal to every other nation that there are legislators in the U.S. on both sides of the aisle who want to see this happen and fast, and that is a message of hope. So with that, Amy, let's do a quick review slide.
So you've completed the Climate Advocate Training webinar. So if you've also participated in the informal session, the informational sessions, congratulations, you're complete with our training modules. And so we appreciate you taking the time. And then also we'd like to review the next steps that you can take. So for next steps, have you jumped onto CCL Community yet, our sister website, or we call it our intranet for CCL members? If not, go to community.citizensclimate.org and log in with the email and password that were emailed to you, or click reset your password. And also then go and check in with the group nearest you. Sarah Wanis at membership@citizensclimatelobby.org can help you find that group. In fact, she may have already emailed you, so check your spam and find out the group leader email and email them and go to their next meeting. It's the second Saturday of the month usually. If there's no group near you, Sarah's going to provide you with the state or regional coordinator's email address so you can find out how to help get a group organized near you. And if you didn't happen to hear back from Sarah or a group leader hasn't contacted you, if you emailed them, please reach out to Brett or I. These things can just end up in spam files, and we are happy to help make that introduction if indeed you've emailed someone or reached out and they haven't gotten back to you. We find that spam thing comes up a lot. Brett?
We are grateful for you taking the time to really just sit through our whole hour together. If you'd like to continue to jump in to trainings, we have a core volunteer training program weekly on Tuesdays. It's, you know, a dozen lessons that we have that are most critical for becoming an effective volunteer across our five levers. Check those out. We know we're growing by leaps and bounds. We'll do our best to help you, but we'd love to just close by thanking you for joining us. We really hope that you found tonight's training useful, informative, and empowering as you continue your own journey with us and all ahead. And we look forward to building the political will for a livable world.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram @CitizensClimate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.